Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, a new podcast from Rabbi Daniel Landes on Parshat Toldot. Rabbi Daniel Landes is the director and Rosh HaYeshiva of the Pardes Institute. And now, Rabbi Daniel Landes.
Thank you, Larry. It's such a pleasure to be doing this broadcast from the Pardes Beit Midrash in Jerusalem, Yerushalayim. And what an incredible parsha. You have such vivid personalities, each one a world unto themselves, each one dependent upon each other. This is a story told out to all you Pardes people, to all those of you who will become Pardes people. You need to go and read immediately the story again. But just as a brief reminder, this is a parsha that begins with Isaac's adulthood, gives Isaac's yichus, that he's the son of Avraham, and that he's 40 years old when he took Rivka and brought her into the house, and immediately goes and covers Yitzchak's adult life through the end of his career. Yitzchak, Isaac, is always here within the parsha, but as in general with Isaac, we see him, we feel him, we sense him. But really what he's about is very elusive. I really want to get to at least part of that today. But to do that, we also are interested in what all the other intertwining personalities are. His wife, Rebecca, the twins, Esau, but we'll call him Esau and Jacob. And the way for me to cut in is, what are their deepest desire? Now, at the beginning of the parsha, Rebecca, is akara. She's without child. She's barren. Yitzchak and prays for her. Lenochach ishto. He prays as she's in front of him. Or according to rabbinic interpretation, the two pray in different opposite ends of the room in a parallel structure, kind of more egalitarian structure. But nonetheless, the parsha tells us that God does listen to Yitzchak. Rivka gives birth, and she has a difficult labor, incredibly difficult labor. And she asks this question, which we believe is the question kind of defines her. Vatomer, she says, Im kein loma zenochi, if so, then what is this, or why is this, or what is this anochi? What is this I consciousness, which is me? Who am I? Im kein, if I'm going to go through this, I need to know who is this anochi. And she sets off on her own, all by herself, to seek out God. This is an incredible idea, and she's able to reach God. And God tells her about the destiny of the two children, and that the younger will serve the older. Excuse me. Let me repeat that in the proper way. You would think the younger would serve the elder, but it's really Rav Yavod Zair. The older will serve the younger. And I believe that this defines the Anochi mission of Rivka. It says in the parsha that she loves Yaakov. She loves the younger child, Jacob. And she does everything to make sure that his destiny will be fulfilled. And that really becomes her Anochi. Let's take a break from her, and let's go to Yaakov. What's Yaakov about? What does Yaakov really want? Well, Yaakov really is the second child. Look, they're twins. They should be considered co-equal, but they're not. Both Yitzchak and Sarah name the children, and they name at least the first children, and the child that they name together is Esav, and Esav seems to refer to his ruddy personality and the hair, and that's what he is called. Vayikru Shemo Esav, they refer to him as Esav when he has emerged. But afterwards, when this child comes out holding onto the heel of Esav, Be'ekav Esav, or Be'ado Ochezet Be'ekav Esav, his hand is holding on to this heel of Esav, Vayikra, singular. And he called his name, meaning Isaac called his name Yaakov. He called him this heel boy. He called him the second raider. He called him this second child. Yitzchak was already 60 years old. They waited 20 years. He was 40 when he married Rivka. Two children come out. Esav is a name shared by in his creation by both parents. However, it's only Yitzchak alone, if you read the pasuk very directly, who gives the name to the second child. The second child gets a second-rate name. And we know about the destiny of the children just from the very beginning. Esav is Ish Yodei Tzayid, Ish Sadeh, a person who can hunt, a person from the field. But Yaakov, and Yaakov, or the Yaakov, or but Yaakov, Ishtam Yosheva Alim is more innocent. Child, Yosheva Alim, who dwells in the tents. And Yitzchak, for all the psychological reasons one could assume from a person who early in life had a number of traumas, a person was always very much alone. Vayav Yitzchak etz Esav. Isaac loved Esav. Kitzayid b'thiv, because he was a hunter with his mouth. What does that mean? Traditionally, the rabbis understand it, that Esav knew how to deal with his father. We'll come back to that in a moment. And or he was always talking. Maybe a simpler pashat is he's always talking about hunting. And Isaac loved this kid with a ruddy appearance, this ruddy child, this manly child. And he loved Esav. The Rivka have it at Yaakov, and Rivka loves Yaakov. But we already know the story of why she loves Yaakov. She loves Yaakov because of his destiny. And in this family, they're all intertwined, but evidently they don't share stories. And when Rivka found out about the destiny, there's no indication of Yaakov, there's no indication that she told this ever to her husband Yitzchak, her husband Isaac. So we have this setup, and we have the setup of Yaakov not being greatly loved by his dad. Doesn't say his father loves him at all. His father only loves Esav, in terms of what we really know. We know the type of name he gives Yaakov, ain't a great name. So what does Yaakov want, this Yaakov? Well, the major story that we have right afterwards is as they are in their early manhood, is we have Yaakov buying, I put that in quotation marks, but it was actually a real sale. It was a real sale, a real buying on the part of Yaakov. He buys the Bechorah. He buys the birthright from his brother Esav. And that's what Yaakov desires. Yaakov desires the birthright. I have no indication in the Parsha, or I see no indication, that Yaakov, even though denied his father's love, even though he's considered a second rater by his father, responds by desperately wanting his father's love. As you might think in contemporary novels and soap operas, that he'll, with psychological analysis, that he would want this type of love. Well, he doesn't seem so. It seems like his mother's love is enough. But what he does want is the Bechorah. He does want the birthright. And the birthright refers to doing the job, taking over the corporation. The corporation we're talking about, this company we're talking about, and becoming the CEO of this company, is to become the CEO of the corporation of ethical monotheism. That's the business. And Yaakov, Yosheva Alim, the one who dwells in tents, knows that business. When the rabbis interpret Yosheva Alim dwells in tents, that this is a child who has already studied in the tents of Torah, this whatever pre-Torah there was of Shem Ve'Aver, the old wisdom, the ancient wisdom, it makes sense that this is the type of child who wants this Bechorah, who wants to take over. We're going to come back to Yaakov in a moment, but before we leave him, Yaakov starts something which is quite amazing. Now, Esav is the one who's the hunter. We haven't really talked about Esav fully yet, and we'll get to him. But Esav's the hunter. Tzayid b'piv, and the word to hunt is used very, very often in the parasha. in his regards. That's his definition. That's how he acts. But if you look to what takes place in this whole birthright transition episode, you see something quite amazing. It talks about in verse 29, chapter 25, verse 29, that Yaakov has prepared this pot of porridge. The Yazid Yaakov Nazid, the porridge is bubbling up. We can almost smell it, this food. And it happens to be exactly in the place of where Esav has come from the field, and Esav is very, very tired. And Esav says to Yaakov, Esav just says to him, Halitani, pour out, like directly pour out into my mouth, like lift up that cauldron, which has that wonderful porridge, these lentils, probably, the Yazid Nazid, this porridge of lentils, Halitani Na, which means pour out Na, either means please, Na, please, or Na, do it now. Na is an emphatic, meaning now. Or Na can also mean the word raw, R-A-W, raw. Give it to me, even if it's not fully cooked, just pour it out to me. This ace of the hunter coming from the field. Min ha-adom, ha-adom of that from this red bread. Now, just so happens that Yaakov is in the right spot. Just so happens that he is cooking up something with an irresistible aroma for a hunter to come back to. It just so happens that this irresistible food is adom ha-adom. It's gnaw, it's raw, or half raw, adom ha-adom. It's red, something that appeals to the ish sadeh, to the man of the field, appeals to the hunter. Ki ayeif anochi, because I am very tired. And in fact, the verse says, Al-Kain Kroshim Adom. That's why we call him Adom, because of this redness of not only of his body, but the redness of the food that he so desired. How did Yaakov know all this? I think what we see here is that Yaakov is the true hunter. Yaakov set a trap for Esav. Yaakov set the most perfect trap in the sense that he didn't have to run after Esav, but Esav ran into the trap. Esav is the one who says, give it to me. Esav is the one who's created desirous. But who set up that condition? And we see Yaakov acting in a way that out-hunters the hunter. And therefore Yaakov says, okay, he's ready to do it. But michra chayom et becharet chali. But sell right now, this moment, your firstbornship, your rights to being the firstborn, your right for taking over as the CEO of the Corporation of Ethical Monotheism, sell to me. And Esau says, look, I'm just going to die. I don't need this bechorah. If I'm just going to die from hunger, why do I even need it? And therefore he's ready to do it. And Yaakov makes him swear, and he swears, and he sells the birthright. And then Yaakov gives to Esav bread on the side. We always like to have some bread with our meals. He gives him this porridge of lentils. And it says very directly the verse, Vayochal. Now we're now talking more about Esav now. Vayochal, he ate. Vayesht, he drank. Vayochem, he got up. Vayelch, and he left. Very short verbs. Talking about a man who from the field who does what he wants to do. Vayivez Esav et Bahran, he made light, he made fun, or even degraded this whole aspect of Bechorah, because now, having been sated, you think that maybe he would regret, he doesn't regret anything that he did. So what drives Esav? Esav also talks about Anochi. And the Anochi of Esav is the Anochi that says, well, let's go back to that that verse. He says, give me for this red, Ki ayef anochi, because I am tired. His sensual nature is such that he defines his anochi. Anochi is a very strong word for I. His I awareness is immediately defined by his physical situation. Ayef, he's the physical man. I am tired. That's who I am. And later, when right in that conversation, Yaakov says, sell me your bechorah. And he says, Esau says, he ne anochi halech lamut. Behold, I, my anochi, I'm ready to die. He's not ready to die. He's not going to die. He's a little bit hungry. But he's so in contact with that moment, his sensual moment. He's a sensual man that defines his anochi. And therefore, later on, he says, why do I even need this Bechoran? And he's Vayivez at the Bechoran. I degrade it. He degrades it. That's what Esav is. Esav is the person of the moment. That's what his Anochi awareness is. The Anochi awareness of his mother Rivka is to make sure that the other son fulfills his destiny. Jacob fulfills his destiny. The eye awareness of the firstborn of Esav is not an eye awareness that has anything to do with Bechora, with the rights to being the scion of those who created ethical monotheism, but as Anochi is defined by that moment of whatever moment he's in of physicality. And therefore, that by definition, Vayivez Esav et Bechora, he degrades the Bechora, because Bechora, which deals, the firstbornship, which deals with ethical monotheism, deals with transcendent values, and he is an immanent man, and there's no transcendence at all involved with him. But there is something with Esav. And what there is with Esav is that Esav very, very much wants, evidently, his father's love. And, you know, a chapter later, after we've gone through kind of the history of Isaac, and Isaac with Rivka, and the whole encounter with Abimelech, and the remaking of the wells, the digging of the wells, and the redigging of the wells, and the spreading of Isaac's business and becoming a wealthy man, near-death encounters, the fact that Isaac always remains within the land and has never left the land. We have the account that Esav marries and does not marry well, marries two women, and both Isaac and Rivka, who according to the Parsha, have a good relationship, a good sexual relationship, and they share the same values. They're both upset with the people, the wives that Esav brought into the home. And if you're going to be the head of ethical monotheism, because they know nothing about the sale, Isaac certainly knows nothing about the sale, Yitzchak, the father, knows nothing about the sale, that must or should have disturbed him. But it doesn't disturb him enough not to do what he wishes to do. And here you have the encounter in which you see what Yitzchak really wants and what Esav really wants. And this is the beginning of chapter 27. Isaac is really old, and Isaac's eyes are dimmed. And he calls upon Esav, his great son, or his older son, Benoha Gadol. And he says to him, Beni, my son. Vayomre love, and he responds, Hineni, here I am. And then he tells him about what he needs to do at that moment. But let's go to these words. What is Esav saying? What is Esav being said? Being said to Esav, and how does he respond? Yitzchak says to him, Beni, which harkens back to the Akedah, when Yitzchak was the son being brought to a trial and dying, brought to a test, and when Yitzchak emerges into his own, clearly as the next leader, and that's what the verses then by the Akedah, by the binding story, tell us, and he is the one who's called Beni by his loving father Avraham. And here, Yitzchak, Isaac, turns to Esav and calls him by this loving term as if there's a trial to begin. And this son, Esav, says, Hineni. He says those important words, the words that appear three times in the Akedah, that Avraham recites, these covenantal terms, the terms of Hineni. Here I'm prepared. I'm prepared to do a task. I'm prepared to offer myself to you. I'm prepared to show my love. Esav has this great desire for his father's love. Why these terms are from the Akedah? And what I understand and what I see here is that Esav is brought to a kind of a test. This is kind of a pathetic parody of the Akedah test. Isaac knows that his son is not up to the up to snuff yet. He knows that he's a hunter, and that a hunter alone is not sufficient. He's going to give him a test in order that, because hinei nozakanti, here now I am old. I don't know the day of my death. And now, take all your implements and your bow and your arrows and go into the field, go into your field, and hunt for me and bring me back something. And through the beautiful delicacies that you will bring back, the fresh kill that you know that I love, this bloodiness, you'll bring it to me and I will eat it, and bavur, and because of this, bavur, because of that you will do, tevarechacha nafshi, my soul can bless you, b'terem mamut, before I die. Why can't he just bless him? He seems that he needs to give, Isaac needs to give Esav a test, so that Esav can transcend his present position. I think this explains a lot. It explains the fact why Esav runs out to do this, not just for this firstbornship notion of getting the blessing, but the fact that Esav is very attentive to his father, needs his father's love, because even though his father loves him, and even though he responds to his father's love, we have this, and we have a feeling that there were meals beforehand, that there were fresh kills before this moment. There is a feeling here, there must be a feeling here, that he is not the right guy for the position. He's not the right guy to be the next leader of ethical monotheism. He's just not the one to be the successor. And somewhere underneath all this, both of them know this. That's why Isaac, who sees Esav making his own decisions and marrying the wrong women, and how are you going to be the head of ethical monotheism when you marry the wrong people? You're not going to have the right children. The grandchildren will not be the right, won't be the right ones. How can this Esav be the one who takes up? And Esav must sense from his father his condemnation. The father wants to change Esav. He wants Esav to make more than he is, more than the hunter. He likes the hunting part, but more than the hunter. He sends him and he gives him an Akedah-like experience. I call it a pathetic parody, because even though the words b'ni, my son, that love is there, and the words hineni, another Akedah word, are really, really used, nonetheless, what he goes out, he hunts something, he brings it back. It's as a father who at the same time is giving his son a test, also protects him within the test, gives him a pathetically easy test. But you know, you send a person out for a test, and you send them out into the field, you don't know who's going to come back. And that is what's going to happen here. Who is Esav? Esav is this Anochi, who's a sensual man, who's trying to be transformed by his father. His father, by the way, who never uses the term Anochi in this parasha about himself, tries to be transformed. He goes out, and we know what happens. Rebecca has overheard. She formulates a plan. She directs very, very carefully and very quickly her son to get the young goats and to kill it, and she prepares the meal, and she dresses Yaakov into a garment that upon feel and upon smell, because his father can't see, will be like that of Esav. And she sends him forward to get the blessing. I have no real indication here that, and I don't see it here in the parasha, that Yaakov would have come up with this plan. Yaakov wanted the Bechorah. He wanted to be in charge. He wanted the job. But the blessing, which is the intimate connection, the charismatic transferal, not of just role, that's done by the Bechorah, the firstbornship, but of the charismatic transfer of identity, in which Avram gave to Isaac, and Isaac could now give to the next son. This is something that Yaakov did not seek, but the mother knows that this is important, and that this is crucial, and this must take place. And at this point, I think that we have this amazing event in which the needs of everyone become exposed, and the transformation of Yaakov himself takes place, and that actually Isaac, Yitzchak, receives that which he desired, but in a form that he never thought. What happens? Isaac comes back in. He's now dressed in these woolly garments. He carries with him a certain smell of live animals. He's bringing in this wonderful dish. And he comes in to see his father. And he's coming in not as himself, but he's coming in as Asaph. I wonder to myself, did he ever come in and have an intimate moment with his father? No. And the only time now that he has an intimate moment with his father's so old, his father's about to die, that that he comes in, he has this intimate moment, and he's not himself. He's pretending to be somebody else. And so he says, and Yaakov, as he comes in, Vayavo Aviv, this is chapter 27, where verses 18, 19, these are important verses. He says to his father, he says, Avi, Daddy, Tati, Avi, which again, reminiscent, this is his own Akedah, reminiscent of the original Akedah, Vayomer, Hineni. And Yitzchak says those words of Hineni, because unbeknownst to himself, this moment is going to be a transitional moment. Mi atabini, who are you, my son? The fact that that Yaakov probably never, as I said, never came in an intimate way, or when he came in, he was never recognized. He's only the kid at the heel. He's always the second raider. And he probably didn't know exactly, he came in an awkward way, and not in the natural, graceful way that the hunter from the field knows how to come in, without awkwardness, without second-guessing himself. We can see a Yaakov kind of coming in, stumbling, not exactly sure of himself. And the father says, Isaac says, Mi atabani, who are you, my son? Vayomer Yaakov el aviv, and Yaakov said to his father, important verses, Anochi, remember this Anochi? I, my I awareness, the I who I am, my existential I, Esav Bechorecha, Asiti Kasher Dibarto Eli, I, now the question is how you translate the rest. Normally we translate, I am Esav, your firstborn, I have done according to what you have instructed to me. And certainly that's the translation. I'm Asaph. But the rabbis so beautifully and so insightfully, and I think it goes to Pshat, says, you know, you can deconstruct the verse. And the verse can then say, Anochi, I, Asaph b'chorecha. I am I, but Asaph, your firstborn son. In other words, that Yaakov recognizes this strange position that he's in. He can't dissemble so greatly. But even deeper than that, he's wearing the clothes. But is he really Esav? Well, what does... And he calls on, he says, come sit down and eat from what I've given you. And he speaks to him, and he speaks to him evidently in a way that Yaakov would speak. And Yitzchak says, you know, how have you rushed here this day? And he says to him, Yaakov says back, because God allowed me to come quickly to you. And Yitzchak says, come closer, and he smells him, and he touches him. And then Yitzchak, having touched and smelled and listened to his son, says those immortal words, Vayomer, HaKol Kol Yaakov VaYadayim Idei Esav. The voice is the voice of Yaakov, the voice of Jacob. And the hands are the hands of Esav. And we always understand this in a way that he understands there's some sort of disjuncture here. How could this well-spoken person who speaks of God, God has maybe come here quickly to you, who knows how to speak properly to the Father, despite whatever awkwardness of body, at the same time could have those that voice of a Yaakov, and at the same time have the hands of an Esav. And that's our normal way of understanding this disjuncture. But there is an outstanding explanation which I think brings everything together, everything we talked about today, from the Menachem Tzion, of Menachem Ben Tzion Zaks, when the great, great authorities and educational leaders and visionaries of 20th century American Judaism, born in Jerusalem, and was lucky enough to have studied very intimately with him, my grandfather. And he says something very different. He says, "Akol kol Yaakov v'yadayim b'day Esav v'yivorechehu," and then he blessed them. And he points out that after he, Isaac, blessed him, blessed this this figure, we don't know the content of the blessing. We don't know what the content of the blessing was. And he says, Menachem Sion says, this blessing was perhaps that he should merit to bring together the voice of Jacob and the hands of Esav. In other words, HaKol Kol Yaakov Yidam Yidei Esav becomes a prophecy, a blessing, a desire. I want, Isaac says, for my successor to have both the transcendent element, the kol, at the same time the immanent element, the hands that can do battle, the hands that can build, the hands that can fend for oneself, the hands that can deal with emergency situations, the hands that can create. At the same time, I need the voice that can learn Torah, the voice that can reason, the voice that can pray, the voice that can interact. I need these two things together. And so this explains, I think, 100% what's taken place. Isaac, Yitzchak, has sent his son Esav out into the field for this kind of a Cato-like test. Go to the field, go hunting, bring back something for me, and as the commentators say, and by this you will show that you honor your father, and through this mitzvah of honoring your father, this transcendent mitzvah, my soul will connect even greater with you, and I will bless you. He wants to transform Esav from being not just a hunter, but Esav to also have the transcendent elements, the spiritual elements, the religious elements, the humanistic elements in its deepest sense of humanism, and the deepest sense of spirituality. And he gets it, but he doesn't get it in the form that he thought. He gets it from Jacob. He gets it from Jacob. What happens with Jacob? Jacob, who we already saw in this foreshadowing when he gets the Bechorah, who starts acting like his brother, the hunter, who lays a trap for his brother, the hunter, this Jacob, this Yosheb HaHalim, this wonderful young man who can study Torah and can study in the yeshivot of Shem Ve'Aver, in the academies of Shem Ve'Aver, who knows the ancient wisdom, starts having to deal with life and realizes he needs that Esav part of himself. And then later on, he dressed up by his mother and comes forth with his food, and he's wearing these garments, and he says, Anochi, he says, I am, and he says, Esav b'chorecha, Esav's your firstborn, but perhaps what he's saying here is, there's not just Anochi Esav b'chorecha, I am becoming, this part of me is also incorporating Esav. And these two parts come together. And Yitzchak feels this. Yitzchak senses this. He doesn't know exactly who's in front of him, but perhaps his wildest dream is finally coming together. A person who can speak with the sensitivity of a Yaakov, but a person who can do with the activity of an Esav. A person can have both. I mean, this is our dream. This is certainly our dream here in this 21st century Israel, that we can have that we can be at the same time, we could be Yaakovs, but not just Yaakovs who study in the yeshiva, but Yaakov and studying the academies and studying our Paradise Beit Midrash, but we have that element of doing the hard battles, the hard creations, and making the hard decisions. But if you just do the hard battles, just do the hard creations, just be an Ish Sadeh, then who are you? You just become a tribalist. You just become an immanent creature. You have to have the call of Yaakov. You have to have a call called Yaakov Yidam Yidei Esav becomes not a disjuncture, but becomes an ideal, and this is what needs to be blessed and needs to be fused. And this explains what has taken place here. Yitzchak gets what he prays for. Yitzchak gets for what he sent forth, except that it's not Esav who somehow is transformed through a test to have those Yaakov-like features which Yitzchak himself has resisted on some levels in the actual person of Yaakov, but nonetheless Yitzchak desires for his son these transcendent figures. He gets instead the transcendent person, the Yaakov, who has now more and greater aspects of Esav. And indeed, this will become the beginning of the final story of Yaakov throughout the generations, throughout his own generation and in future generations in the inheritance of Yaakov. Will we have someone who could stand up to Esav himself, and stand up to a Lavan, and he has a person who can wrestle with the angel, and that becomes Esav's story, because Yaakov's story, because Yaakov is no longer just Yaakov himself. Yaakov now has to also wear those garments of Esav. Yaakov has to preserve his call, but he has to have hands that can also do the tough job. Wonderful learning with you from Pardes Beit Midrash. Go over the parsha, see if this what we did today helps, and look forward to hearing your comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rabbi Landes. Your comments on the podcast are always important to us. Please send your emails to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.